Hello, and welcome to the July 2018 InfoTech Threat Landscape Briefing. My name is Jessica Ireland, and I am a director in our Security and Threat Intelligence practice. I will be facilitating today's briefing. During today's discussion, we will cover topics related to cybersecurity, threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and threat actor exploits and tactics. Our cybersecurity section covers high-level topics such as threat trends, data breaches, control strategies, and exposure to vulnerabilities that act to broaden your understanding of the cybersecurity impact on your business. Our threat actor campaign section covers topics related to nation-states, cybercriminals, and hacktivists orchestrating campaigns designed to compromise networks and exfiltrate sensitive data. Our regulatory compliance and legal section covers trends in the global regulatory and legal landscape with the potential to impact compliance adherences or disrupt business operations. And lastly, our exploitations and tactics section provides information related to the tools, tactics, and exploits threat actors are leveraging in their attack campaigns. Today's briefing will be supported by myself, consulting analysts Michelle Tran and Logan Rohde, and senior consulting analyst Ian Mulholland. During today's briefing, we will cover topics related to only 55% of businesses having cyber insurance, when tech giants screw up, Vietnam cybersecurity laws, and the North Korean USB ban. Let's begin.
In a world where it's not about if you will get hacked, but when, having insurance against this inevitability may seem like a no-brainer. And yet, despite this reality, a large number of organizations do not currently have insurance. In fact, according to Imogen Hargreaves of PC World, 45% of Fortune 500 companies and 65% of small to medium enterprises do not have cybersecurity insurance. Many organizations have opted to put aside a certain amount of money in case of a breach due to it being the cheaper option, or because it avoids situations where an insurance contract does not cover the specific type of breach that occurred, and consequently a claim cannot be made. When it comes to making the choice to buy cybersecurity insurance, there are pros and cons that need to be considered. While cybersecurity insurance may not be right for everybody, I would recommend every organization take the time to, at the very least, consider the option and assess its plausibility. A pro to adopting cybersecurity insurance is that this insurance aims to protect organizations from the costly process of recovering from a breach. With nearly every piece of technology now touching the internet, the damage of a breach can be far-reaching. Setting aside a set amount of money instead of purchasing insurance may not be sufficient to cover all of the cost incurred by the breach. Therefore, a benefit of having insurance is that the insurance company will be able to scale how much money can be returned to you. On the other side of this same coin, cybersecurity insurance can be expensive and, like many things in the areas of security and insurance, hard to justify. It may be that the cost of cybersecurity insurance exceeds the amount of money the company is willing to put away in case of a breach. Another benefit of cybersecurity insurance is that it encourages organizations to build a stronger security program to reduce insurance rates. More effective security reduces the likelihood of a breach and minimizes the damage that can occur when a breach finally does occur. This can be a strong supporting point in justifying the need to adopt cybersecurity insurance. Finally, organizations must also consider the reality of today's cybersecurity landscape. People are getting breached harder and more frequently than ever, but companies are afraid to report the full extent of the breach for fear of suffering additional reputational damage. This means insurance researchers have limited information to leverage, and therefore insurance quotes and coverage may not be as accurate as they should be. Because of this, the organization considering purchasing the insurance should ensure they understand the risks unique to their organization and select an insurance provider that addresses those risks. InfoTech offers several research sets in the risk space and has analysts standing by to help you discover these risks.
Security firm Okta, specializing in identity management technology, discovered that Apple has been allowing bad code to come through their approved whitelisting systems. The developers who created the tools apparently, quote, misunderstood Apple's guidance for running a whitelisting service on Macs. Companies such as Carbon Black and F-Secure were among those named. As of now, the developers are aware of this issue. Apple is working to course correct, and nothing needs to be done immediately on your part. Just be aware. Various tools like Google Santa, Yelp's OS X Collector, Chronicle's Virus Total, and others are all updating their tools as needed to better work with Apple's code signing API.
On June 12th, the Vietnamese government passed a controversial law aimed at curbing political dissent online and limiting activists' ability to use the internet to organize protests, which the government sees as hostile and aimed at overthrowing the current regime. The law requires websites like Facebook and Google to remove and to prevent further sharing of content that the government disapproves of, and websites have only 24 hours to comply after receiving a written request from the government. Moreover, all social media companies operating in Vietnam are required to open local offices, as the law requires Vietnamese users' data to be stored locally so that such data can easily be provided to the government's specialized cybersecurity task force if needed. However, many fear that this is really just a channel to identify and arrest online activists, a practice that's been on the rise in recent years. According to Human Rights Watch, at least 41 rights advocates and bloggers were arrested in 2017 for joining protests or other events or publishing articles critical of the government. The law has been criticized by several groups, including Amnesty International, who claims that the law restricts free speech and leaves, quote, no safe space for Vietnamese people to speak freely, end quote. And the Asia Internet Coalition argues that the law will stall the growth of Vietnam's digital economy, given that it places several new restrictions on the ways companies must operate in the country. And the AIC also notes that the law will likely limit opportunities for Vietnamese tech startups to enter the market and decrease foreign tech companies' interest in establishing operations in Vietnam. The irony of this expected economic downturn is that Vietnam's government is actively trying to expand its digital economy and encourage foreign investment within the country. All things considered, it is difficult not to see this law as a governmental power grab, especially in the wake of GDPR, Europe's sweeping regulation aimed at protecting the personal data and privacy of EU citizens online, which is expected to be the beginning of a new worldwide standard for data privacy. The Vietnamese law, however, amounts to something like a reverse GDPR, as it is written specifically to limit users' data privacy online. Facebook and Google are two major companies that will be affected by the new law. They have both noted their concerns with it, but have not released public statements outlining how they will handle the new legal hurdle, though both are expected to restrict content within Vietnam. The law doesn't go into effect until 2019, so we'll have to wait and see the full extent of its consequences for social media websites.
Earlier last month, Singapore held the North Korea and United States summit. Over 2,500 local and international journalists registered for the event, all receiving a goodie bag containing bottled water, tourist pamphlets, and most interestingly, a USB-powered fan. However, while the fans seemed all good intention to keep the media cool in Singapore's hot weather, concerns were raised when a Dutch journalist tweeted out a photo of the fan. Following the tweet, security experts were quick to tweet back, warning journalists to refrain from plugging the USB-powered fans into their laptops for fear that they contained hidden malware that would grant threat actors access and control to their computers. While it has yet been confirmed whether the fans handed out at the summit contained any malware, this case brings to light a much grander point, the potential threat that comes from plugging in foreign USBs. As a security best practice, we recommend that everyone be wary of connecting foreign devices into your computer, and in this case, USBs you did not purchase. This includes devices given at functions like conferences or summits, or devices left unclaimed at your workplace. While you can run antivirus software on USBs for malware, antivirus scans monitor for known vulnerabilities, therefore not guaranteeing safety from all outsider threats. When in doubt, do not plug it in. This case additionally provides insight on the importance of having a protocol in place detailing how to respond to USB incidents. While having a dedicated USB incident response plan may sound extensive, end users often fall victim to plugging in foreign USBs due to human error and lack of employee awareness. Help fight the fire, speed up recovery time, and crosstalk between departments by being proactive and having a plan. For more information, check out InfoTech's Security Incident Management Program below.
This concludes our monthly threat briefing. If you have any questions or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us to set up an analyst call. Thank you.